Imagine for a second you're building a custom home. A beautiful architectural masterpiece.
Okay.
You hire a high-end painter.
Okay.
And you tell them you want the living room walls painted a very specific shade of expensive imported blue.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of, you know, taping off the trim, laying down drop cloths, and carefully rolling the walls, this painter backs a tanker truck up to your front door and just floods the entire house.
Oh, wow.
The windows, the expensive hardwood floors, the roof, the driveway. I mean, everything is coated in this incredibly expensive blue paint.
Okay, that's absurd.
And then, without a hint of irony, they hand you a bill for 5,000 gallons of paint when the job actually really only required 3.
It sounds like a caricature of incompetence when you frame it that way. I mean, no one in the construction world would ever pay that bill. They'd sue.
Exactly.
Mm.
And yet, this is precisely what is happening every single day in the electronics manufacturing industry.
Yeah.
Is a financial hemorrhage that has become so normalized people have just stopped noticing the blood on the floor.
We're seeing standard barrel plating processes, which, let's be honest, are the default for so many legacy manufacturers, consuming roughly 30% more precious metal than is actually necessary.
30%.
30% more than, say, a selective reel-to-reel process.
Yeah.
And we aren't talking about paint here. We are talking about gold. We are talking about palladium.
The most volatile, expensive materials on the periodic table.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the provocation I want to start with. In 2026, that industry standard safety margin, where you coat an entire strip of metal just to ensure conductivity at one tiny contact point,
yeah.
It is no longer a safety net.
No.
It is a liability.
Yeah.
It is a technical failure masquerading as a process.
It's a hidden tax. And frankly, if you are still relying on that dip and ship mentality, you aren't just wasting money. You are setting yourself up for catastrophic field failures in the next generation of hardware.
But we aren't just here to admire the problem. We are here to dismantle it and build something better.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we are going to unpack how you can cut precious metal consumption by up to 60%, yes, 60, while actually increasing component reliability in high vibration environments like electric vehicles.
Spend less, get better performance. It sounds like a paradox, or maybe even snake oil, but it is entirely possible through rigorous engineering.
Welcome to Reflections. I'm Oliver Watts.
And I'm Emma Rhodes.
We are glad to have you with us. If you're a regular listener, you know the drill. We aren't here to give you a textbook lecture or, you know, read you a press release.
No, we are industry insiders talking to peers. So if you're an engineer staring at a CAD drawing or a supply chain manager sweating over gold prices,
or a QA pro analyzing a failed part, pull up a chair.
We know the pressure you are under. The mandates are, well, they're contradictory. Streamline the process, slash the costs.
But, oh, by the way, hit these aggressive sustainability targets for mission-critical components that absolutely cannot fail.
It's the classic good, fast, cheap pick two dilemma, but the market is demanding all three, right?
All three, non-negotiable. And today's topic hits that trifecta. We are digging into renewable, smarter components.
Which is really a shift in manufacturing philosophy. We are moving from blanket coverage, the idea of just covering everything in gold and hoping for the best.
A tanker truck approach.
Exactly. We're moving from that to precision selectivity in electroplating and stamping.
And I want to set the tone right now. This isn't about cutting corners. This isn't about making a budget product.
Not at all.
This is about the arts and sciences of manufacturing. It's about combining creative design with rigorous physics to just stop being wasteful.
That's the key right there. It's about precision, not scarcity.
So let's unpack this. First, we have to look at the landscape. We are calling this the silent crisis. Why is this happening now in 2026? What changed?
Well, it's a convergence of three massive pressure points that have been building for a decade, and they've finally collided.
Okay, what's the first one?
First one, which everyone feels viscerally, is gold volatility.
The charts look like a heart attack.
They do. I mean, the price of precious metals fluctuates wildly based on geopolitical events, inflation data, currency strengths, you name it.
Right.
So if your manufacturing process relies on using a massive amount of gold weigh, more than you strictly need, your unit cost is tied to a market you just cannot control.
You're basically gambling with your margins every time the market opens. You quote a part in January, and by the time you run it in June, your profit is completely gone because gold spiked.
Precisely. You are exposed. And shareholders hate exposure.
So that's the financial pressure. What's number two?
The second pressure point is regulatory. And this one is keeping plant managers up at night. We're looking at the EPA's new effluent guidelines regarding PFAS and metal finishing.
Okay.
We are anticipating full enforcement by 2027.
That is effectively tomorrow in the automotive world.
It is immediate. And what that means is that the old ways of plating those high-volume chemical baths, the massive tanks needed for barrel plating, are becoming a huge liability. The waste treatment overhead is going to skyrocket. If you are generating more waste than you need to, or if you are dragging out more chemistry than necessary because you're dipping the whole part, you are going to pay for it big time.
So you have financial pressure from the market and regulatory pressure from the government. What's the third pressure point?
The third one is technical. It's the dip and ship problem itself.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Dip and ship, or barrel plating, it was built for a different era.
Okay.
It was built for a time when gold was relatively cheap and environmental oversight was, well, loose. The philosophy was, just plate the whole thing. It's easier. It provides a safety buffer.
A margin for error.
Exactly. If I plate the whole terminal, I don't have to worry about exactly where the contact point is.
But that buffer has become a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I want to push back a bit, because I know a lot of legacy engineers who will say, look, plating the whole thing is safer. If I have gold everywhere, I don't have to worry about corrosion anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that logic failing now?
Because the applications have changed so drastically, we aren't just making toaster ovens or, you know, static desktop computers anymore. We are making electric vehicles. We're building 5G infrastructure.
Environments with a lot more stress.
A lot more. And in these environments, the old answer, just use thicker, soft gold, is actually failing.
This is the part that blew my mind when I was diving into the research.
Hmm.
We'd assume that if we put more gold on it, it's a premium product.
Right, the luxury approach.
But you're saying that in an EV, that luxury gold layer is actually a death sentence for the connector.
In high vibration environments, yes. It absolutely is. It leads to a specific failure mode called fretting corrosion.
Fretting corrosion. Okay, let's go deep on this. Define that for the non-metallurgists in the room.
Sure. So imagine a connector in an electric vehicle, a sensor connection, or maybe a battery management system terminal. That car is moving, but more importantly, it's vibrating.
Constantly.
And EVs have different vibration harmonics than internal combustion engines. We're talking higher frequencies, different amplitudes.
So the connector is locked in place, right? It's plugged in.
To the naked eye, it's locked. It's solid. But at a microscopic level, those two surfaces, the male and female pins, are rubbing against each other,
what?
Back and forth, millions of times per hour. That microscopic oscillating movement is called fretting.
Like rubbing sandpaper on a contact point. Very,
yeah.
Very fine sandpaper.
Exactly. Now, gold is a soft metal. It's noble. It doesn't corrode, which is great, but it is soft.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a thick layer of soft gold, that fretting motion smears it, it wears it down, and eventually it wears through the gold and exposes the base metal underneath, usually copper or a copper alloy.
And copper loves to oxidize.
It oxidizes instantly.
Yeah.
So now you have copper oxide debris mixing with the gold wear particles. This creates a little pile of trash right at the contact interface.
Okay.
And here is the kicker. Copper oxide is an insulator.
Ah. So you've essentially built a tiny resistor right inside your connector.
Worse. You built an intermittent switch. You get these resistance spikes. The signal drops, then comes back, then drops again. The car throws an error code. The sensor fails.
And when you pull the part out to look at it.
It looks fine to the naked eye.
That is a nightmare for diagnostics.
It is the no trouble found scourge of the industry. And it's caused because we all thought more soft gold was the safer answer.
So the counterintuitive fact here is that material redundancy, just adding more and more soft gold, does not equal reliability.
No.
In fact, it actually accelerates the failure in these specific environments.
That's the crux of it. You are paying extra for a material that is actually causing your product to fail faster.
It's a double hit.
It is. You're eroding your profit margins by overplating, and you're eroding your brand reputation with these weird, untraceable field failures.
That is a terrifying thought for a quality assurance manager.
Yeah.
You think you're being safe by overspecifying, but you're actually engineering a flaw into the system.
It really shifts the paradigm. We have to stop thinking that more is better and start thinking smart is better.
Okay, let's hit the reset button for a second. I want to make sure everyone catches this. Because if you're multitasking, maybe you're driving or checking an email, you might have missed the gravity of this situation.
Let's recap the crisis. Number one, legacy plating methods like barrel or flood plating are wasting upward of 30% of your material. You are literally plating trash.
Areas of the pin that will never see an electron.
Never.
Number two, Throwing thicker gold at the problem doesn't fix vibration issues. In fact, it leads to fretting corrosion, which kills your connectors in EVs and 5G applications.
And number three, the impending EPA regulations regarding PFAS are going to make those big, sloppy chemical baps incredibly expensive to maintain by 2027. Your costs are going to go up.
So the old way is expensive, potentially illegal soon, and technically flawed.
Yes.
Great. So what do we do?
We pivot. We have to engineer our way out of it.
Next, let's talk about the solution. This brings us to what the data calls renewable smarter components.
And I love that framing. It's not just a product, it's a manufacturing philosophy. It's about being renewable by design. And it stands on three pillars.
Okay.
The first pillar is operational precision.
This is where we get into the cool tech. We are talking about selective reel-to-reel plating.
Right. And you have to contrast this with the barrel plating we just trashed. In barrel plating, you dump thousands of loose parts into a barrel, you spin it in a chemical bath, and everything gets coated.
It's chaotic.
It's chaotic. It's statistical.
It's the shotgun approach. Spray and pray.
Exactly. Selective reel-to-reel is the sniper rifle. Imagine a continuous strip of metal. Maybe it's already stamped pins. Maybe it's just a flat strip flying through a machine at 600 feet per minute.
That is incredibly fast. That's highway speed for a manufacturing line.
It's a blur.
Yeah.
But inside that machine, we are using custom engineered masking and controlled depth immersion to put the metal exactly where it needs to be.
And nowhere else.
And nowhere else. We can use spot plating to put a tiny dot of gold exactly on the contact bump. Or we can use stripe plating to run a thin line of palladium right down the center of the terminal where the mating pin will slide.
But come on, it's 600 feet per minute. How accurate can you really be? I mean, things vibrate, belts slip. Are we talking about splashing gold generally in the right area?
No, not at all. We are talking about precision specs that show deposition location control within plus or minus 0.005 inches.
That is 5/1000ths of an inch. That is thinner than a human hair.
It is. The masking technology has evolved to the point where we can mechanically lock the strip in place, mask off everything but the critical zone, plate it, and release it, all while the strip is moving at speed.
So what does that precision buy you, other than, you know, bragging rights?
Waste reduction, primarily. You eliminate the need to strip plating off areas where it shouldn't be, which is a nasty chemical process in itself.
Right.
But the big number is material savings. You can reduce precious metal usage by 40 to 60% without compromising the contact interface at all.
60%. That is a massive number.
It's huge. I mean, think about your bill of materials. If gold is one of your biggest line items, and for a connector manufacturer, it usually is. And I tell you, I can cut that cost in half just by being more precise with where we put it.
That changes the entire economics of your product line.
It completely changes the bid. Suddenly you aren't fighting for pennies. You have dollars to play with.
Exactly.
And the key takeaway here is you are only paying for the metal that actually conducts electricity. Everything else, the sides of the pin, the crimp area, the carrier strip, is just expensive decoration.
And in an industrial component, hidden inside a dashboard, nobody needs expensive decoration.
Unless you're making jewelry for robots, no, you don't.
So that's the how. You use selective plating to be surgical. But now we need to talk about the what. And this leads us to the second pillar, material intelligence.
This is where the chemistry gets really interesting. We are seeing a major shift from pure hard gold to palladium nickel, or PDNI.
Now, I know some engineers get nervous when you talk about swapping out gold. Gold is the gold standard, right?
Well,
I can hear the objections now. Oh, we tried palladium in the 80s and it was porous. It failed.
And that objection is valid if you're living in 1985.
Fair enough.
Back then, the plating chemistry wasn't as advanced and palladium deposits did tend to have microcracks or porosity. But modern PDNI chemistry is dense, ductile, and incredibly consistent. The porosity issue is solved.
Okay, so assuming the chemistry works, why switch? What is the real advantage over gold?
Okay, so let's look at the physics. Specifically, let's look at density.
All right, let's unpack the density argument. This is just pure math.
Gold is dense, very, very dense. It has a specific gravity of about 19.3 grams per cubic centimeter.
Okay.
Palladium nickel, on the other hand, comes in at about 10.8.
So almost half the density. That's a huge difference.
Right. So think about how you buy metal versus how you use it. You buy precious metals by weight, by the troy ounce or the gram. That's how the market prices it.
Mm.
But you use them by volume, by the thickness on the part. You specify 30 micro inches of plating on a drawing.
Okay, I see where you're going. Because PD&I is so much less dense, you need less physical weight of metal to fill that same volume of 30 microinches.
Exactly. That's the aha moment. Because PD&I is lighter, for the exact same thickness of plating, you use roughly half the weight of precious metal compared to gold.
So even if the price per ounce was exactly the same, and it fluctuates, but they're often comparable, you'd save money just because you're using less physical material to cover the same area.
Precisely. This shields your bill of materials from the volatility of the gold market. When gold spikes, you aren't hit nearly as hard because you simply aren't using as much mass.
You have a natural hedge built right into the physics of the material.
You do.
But cost isn't everything. We talked about fretting corrosion earlier. So how does PD&I stack up against gold in terms of reliability? Because if it's cheap but it fails, we're right back to square one.
It wins, hands down. And this brings us to the hardness argument. We measure hardness using the Knoop scale.
Give us the numbers.
Traditional cobalt hardened gold, the standard hard gold, usually sits around 130 to 200 on the Knoop scale.
130 to 200.
Okay. A PD&I sits between 400 and 500.
Wow. So it's more than twice as hard.
Yes. And that hardness is the direct answer to the fretting problem. Because it is so much harder, it is inherently more resistant to those micro movements we talked about.
It doesn't smear.
It doesn't smear. It doesn't wear down as easily under vibration. It maintains that barrier layer between the contact and the copper base.
So it resists that sandpaper effect much, much longer.
Much longer. In cycle testing, PD&I consistently outperforms hard gold in high vibration scenarios. It's not even close.
So wait a minute. If PD&I is cheaper by density and harder by physics and better at resisting vibration, why do we use gold at all? Why isn't the whole world just PD&I?
That's the million-dollar question. And the answer is, we still use a little bit of gold. The standard solution, the best practice, is to put a gold flash on top of the PD&I.
Just a dusting. A very thin layer.
A tiny layer. That may be 2 to 5 microinches. This gives you the best of both worlds.
Why do we need it? What's the point of that little layer?
Two main reasons. One, solderability. Gold is incredibly easy to solder to. Palladium can be a little tricky.
Okay.
And two, lubricity. PD&I is hard, which means it can have a higher coefficient of friction. The gold acts as a solid lubricant. It helps the parts slide together smoothly when you plug them in, which reduces the insertion force.
So it prevents stiction or galling on the contact surface?
Exactly. So what you've built is a composite shield. You get a surface that is chemically inert and slippery thanks to the gold flash, and underneath you have a backbone that is mechanically robust and corrosion resistant thanks to the PD&I.
That is just smart engineering. You aren't just throwing one metal at the problem. You're layering them to use their individual strengths. It's like a sandwich where every single ingredient has a very specific job.
That's material intelligence. It's not about loving gold or hating gold. It's about using the right molecule for the right job.
Okay, let's hit the reset button again. We've covered a lot of ground, and I want to make sure the logic here is crystal clear.
So, to recap the solution pillars so far, one, selective plating using spot or stripe techniques creates that plus or minus 0.005 precision. You stop plating the waste, and you only plate the functional area.
And you cut your usage by up to 60%.
Right.
Two, switching to PD&I uses half the weight of metal due to its lower density. You save money instantly on the raw material buy.
And three, PD&I is significantly harder up to 500 Knoop, which directly solves the vibration failure points found in EVs. You get a product that survives the road.
But we aren't done yet. There's a third pillar, and honestly, I think this is the one that gets overlooked the most.
It often is.
It's the hidden level of manufacturing.
Yeah.
Finally, we have to talk about strategic integration.
Yes, the stamping plating synergy.
It sounds like a buzzword, synergy.
Yeah.
But in practice, it is where the rubber meets the road, because you can't just plate a part perfectly if the part itself wasn't designed to be plated that way.
Exactly. This is where the silos in our industry just kill us. Usually, a mechanical engineer designs a stamped part. They focus on the spring force, the geometry, the fit.
Mm-hmm.
They finish the design, they cut the tool, and then they throw it over the wall to the plating house.
And the plater looks at it and screams.
Right. They look at it and say, we can't spot plate this. You put the contact point right next to a carrier strip feature that blocks our mask. We have to dip the whole thing.
So the part's geometry literally gets in the way of the plating tooling.
Exactly. Or another common one. The strip has camber. It curves slightly because of the stamping stress.
Right.
If the strip isn't perfectly straight, it drifts in the plating machine. If it drifts by just 0.01 inches, that spot of gold misses the contact point. Now you have scrap, a whole reel of scrap.
So this third pillar is really about precious stamping logic. It's about DFM design for manufacturing, but specifically designed for plating.
We need to engineer the stamping strip layout to accommodate the selective plating masking guides before the tool is even cut.
So before you even make the die that punches the metal, you are thinking about how the plating mask is going to physically fit onto that strip.
You have to. You absolutely have to. You have to align the pilot holes, the little holes that pull the strip through the machine with the plating masking fixtures. You have to design the carrier to be robust enough to hold the part rigid while it's flying through the plating fluids.
If you do this up front, what's the benefit?
You get higher throughput speeds, you get dramatically reduced scrap rates, and most importantly, you unlock the ability to use selective plating on complex parts that otherwise would have to be barrel plated.
This explains why some companies can quote a part so much cheaper than others.
Mm-mm.
It's not just that they have a cheaper gold supplier.
No.
It's that they designed the part to be plated cheaply from the very beginning.
That is the secret. That's the competitive moat. This is what Precious Plate refers to as the arts and sciences.
I really like that phrase. Break it down for me.
So the art is the creative problem solving. How do we design a custom tooling fixture to mask this weirdly shaped part? How do we orient the part on the strip to maximize the gold savings? That's creativity. That's the art.
And the science.
The science is the rigorous metallurgical control. The bath chemistry, the deposition rates, the current density, the layer thickness verification using X-ray fluorescence, all the hard data.
So you need both.
You need both. A job shop might have the science. They can run a bath correctly, but they lack the art, the ability to re-engineer the strip to save you money in the first place.
I've heard that term job shop used a bit pejoratively in this context. What's the distinction you're making?
A job shop is transactional. You give them a box of parts, they plate them, they send them back. That's it.
They don't ask questions.
They don't ask questions. They don't challenge your design. They just dip and ship.
Whereas a strategic partner or someone integrated says, hey, wait a minute. If you move this pilot hole 2 millimeters to the left, or if you change the pitch of the strip, we can save you 40% on gold.
That is the difference. That is the synergy. It requires a conversation before the tooling is built, not after.
So we have the three pillars: operational precision, material intelligence, and strategic integration. Now let's talk about the bottom line. Let's get into chapter 5, the business case and future proofing.
This is where we talk to the CFO. Because usually the CFO doesn't care about new partners.
No, they care about the quarterly earnings call. So does this technology actually make money?
It saves money, which flows directly to the bottom line. Look at the competitive landscape. Competitors who are already using selective reel-to-reel technology are bidding 15 to 20% lower on raw material costs.
15 to 20%. In automotive or any high-volume manufacturing, that is your entire margin.
It is. If you are bidding against someone with that cost structure and you are still using barrel plating, you have lost before you even started.
You're bringing a knife to a gunfight.
You are. You cannot compete on price, so you have to compete on whatnot.
Thank God.
Our gold is thicker. We already proved that's a technical liability.
So you're more expensive and your product is technically worse. That's a tough sales pitch.
It's an impossible sales pitch. And consider the risk of the status quo. Imagine having to explain to your shareholders why your unit costs are rising because gold is up, while your competitors' costs are stabilizing because they switched to PDNI and selective plating.
It's an indefensible position.
It is.
But there's another layer to the business case, and that's sustainability. Scope 3 emissions. This is becoming huge.
Massive. And a lot of people are still trying to wrap their heads around it. Scope 3 covers the emissions from your entire supply chain, not just your own factory.
So it's not just the smoke coming out of your stack. It's the smoke coming out of the mine that dug up the gold you bought in the first place.
Correct. And mining precious metals is incredibly energy intensive. It moves tons and tons of earth to get just grams of metal. It creates a massive carbon footprint.
So by using less metal,
by reducing the plating thickness and volume through selective deposition, you are directly lowering your scope 3 carbon emissions. You are minimizing that upstream mining impact.
You are using less virgin material. That is why they call it renewable. You are extending the value of the resource itself.
Exactly. And for OEMs like Ford, Tesla, or Apple, who are auditing their supply chains for carbon neutrality, being able to say, we reduced our gold consumption by 50% is a massive competitive advantage. It helps them meet their goals.
And then there's compliance.
Yep.
Meeting standards like IATF 16949 for automotive.
Which is incredibly rigorous. You need repeatability. You need process control. Selective plating gives you that statistical control that automotive auditors love.
Mm-hmm.
Barrel plating is inherently variable parts shield each other in the barrel. The distribution of thickness is a bell curve. Selective plating is precise. Every part sees the same current, the same time, the same chemistry.
So really, this is about a fundamental transformation. You are moving from a reactive stance where you are terrified of gold surcharges and EPA fines to a proactive rhythm.
Predictable costs.
Yeah.
Higher throughput. Lower environmental impact. It is the only logical path to 2030 growth.
It decouples your unit costs from market volatility. That is the holy grail of supply chain management.
It really is. It turns a commodity risk into an engineering advantage.
Okay. We are coming up on time. We've gone deep on the problem, the physics, the chemistry, and the money. Now we need to give our listeners a strict outro with actionable steps.
We did. And we want to be very clear here. Listening is great, but doing is better. The industry is moving, with or without you.
So here is the conclusion. Renewable smarter components is not just a nice idea. It is the future. If you want to survive the next decade of regulation and competition, you have to move this way.
So let's break down the next steps into tiers. Depending on where you are in your journey, here is what you need to do.
Tier one. This is for the curious. Maybe you suspect your lines are inefficient, but you're not sure. Ask yourself, are my components over-engineered? Am I plating areas that don't need it?
To find out, you need to download the Design for Manufacturing DFM Plating Checklist. It's a simple tool to audit your current designs. It helps you see the red flags immediately.
Okay, tier two. You want to see the numbers. You need to verify the ROI before you pitch this to your boss.
Use the precious metal savings calculator. Put in your current gold usage, put in the PD&I switch, put in the spot plating reduction. It projects the ROI for you instantly. You can see the savings right there.
And tier three, this is for the people who are ready to move. The consult.
If you are serious about optimizing your production line, you need to talk to a human. You need to contact the experts at Precious Plate. You need to contact the experts at Precious Plate. You need an engineer to look at your strip layout and say, here is the opportunity.
Explicitly, we are instructing you to optimize your line. Here is how you reach them.
Visit preciousplate.com. That's preciousplate.tekyo.com. Join the email list to get those resources we mentioned, the checklist, and the calculator.
But if you want to solve a problem today, if you have a bleed in your budget, you need to stop right now. Pick up the phone. Call a surface finishing engineer directly at 716-283-0690.
Don't let your margins get eaten by waste. Make the call.
Be precise. Be smart. Thanks for joining us on Reflections. I'm Oliver Watts.
And I'm Emma Rhodes.
See you in the next deep dive.